Good morning. If y'all haven't met me yet, my name is Ray. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm excited to be with you. So, most of us know about this account back in the mid-1800s. A battle took place in which about 200 men found themselves defending what was a mission building that had been turned into a fort against an opposing force numbering in the thousands. Defeat was certain. The hope of reinforcements didn't happen. The opposing army's general sent a letter with the terms of surrender. The defenders had to surrender, a total surrender, or they would all be killed. No prisoners would be taken. Every man would die. And as the story goes, the leader of the 200 men pulled them all together, and he told them of the terms of surrender. He read the letter to them, and then this man, I believe he's when it was in his mid-20s. He really wasn't a trained officer. He was a lawyer. He pulled out his battle sword and he drew a line in the sand. He was on one side. The other 200 were on the other side. And he told the men that he was going to stay in that mission fort, the Alamo, and defend it to his very death, to the very end. And he said, I now want every man who is determined to stay here and die with me to come across the line. And all but one did so. Yeah, it's like crazy, right? I'm guessing, you know, when they realize what's going on, I'm not sure all their choices were, you know, but it's like, it's not like everyone just jumped up and down and said, yeah, I'm going to go across the line right now. But eventually, all but one did so. And we know that their battle was lost. They all died. But this intense scene of the line in the sand has lived on. And so it's come to mean a life-changing, life-determining, in the face of all fear and trembling, decision to go against what is comfortable, what seems to be safer and the more sensible route. The term means it's time to make a choice. You're either on one side or the other. And today we begin a second series in the Gospel of John, and the title is The Line in the Sand. Jesus drew a number of lines in the sand, and the first happened in John chapter 6. That's the chapter we ended the first series with. John chapter 6 saw the height of Jesus' popularity, where it says that he fed, people came to him, flocked to him. The Jesus bandwagon was rolling. And it said, in this remote place, over 5,000 men alone, not to mention their wives and women and children, gathered to hear Jesus and to see him and see what he was going to do next. Probably over 10,000 people. And I read that, I've read that, and I thought, where did these people come from? This is just down the countryside with the villages surrounding it. They came from miles around. This whole Jesus following was a snowball going downhill, catching steam. And then Jesus drew a line in the sand. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. Oh, you mean you're like Moses? You're going to give us manna from heaven every day. No, you need to eat my flesh and drink my blood. People didn't know what to think. But this much happened. At that point, the glitter was gone. The response, it says in verse 66 of chapter 6, from this time on, getting a little bit of glare here, I need to pull this out. From this time on, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. Jesus drew the line in the sand, and people stayed on the other side. Earlier this spring, we did a series called Redefine Believe. And in that series, we covered the first six chapters of the Gospel of John. And we said that the Gospel of John is all about believing, but not just the mere sense of believing that a lot of times we think of today. It's the Greek word pistuo, which means expanded, means to totally trust in, to rely upon, and adhere to. John said he wrote the Gospels for this reason. These things are written to you that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the very Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And so we spent 6 weeks earlier this spring looking at that redefined believe, pistuo. And up to that first line in the sand that Jesus drew in John chapter 6, many said they were followers of Jesus, and they did believe in him. And then he drew the line in the sand, and they stopped following. And as we go along, what we see happens is this. Jesus kept making outrageous statements that set him apart from any and every prophet that ever was, any religious leader, any sort of theocratic king that ever existed. In fact, he made statements that to everyone's ears sounded blasphemous. Like, you need to feed on me, the bread of life, and you'll live forever. And right along with this came increasing opposition. It grew and grew and became more and more hostile. John chapter 7, which is what we're looking at this morning, takes place 6 months after that first line in the sand. And the fallout just continued. The chapter begins and ends with and is full of increasing opposition to Jesus. Listen, verse 1, it says, after this, Jesus went around in Galilee. He did not want to go about in Judea because the Jewish leaders there were looking for a way to kill him. That's how the chapter starts. The way the chapter ends is this way, is that the chief priests and the Pharisees are debating about condemning Jesus as a blasphemer. Actually, it really wasn't much of a debate. One person kind of pushed back, and the rest of them were saying, look, you're crazy. Are you going to become one of his followers too? The minds were already made up. And this tone of intensifying opposition and hostility, condemnation and threats by the leaders, and then right along with this was an increasing fear and confusion amongst the rest of the people, the crowds. And it runs throughout this entire chapter. The setting of chapter 7 gives us a really exciting opportunity. It's the Festival of Tabernacles, one of the big three festivals for the Jews throughout the year. And what was expected is that if you were a good, pious Jew, you would try your best to make that trek into Jerusalem. And so the city of Jerusalem would just become very packed. Thousands upon thousands of faithful would gather together for a week long of the festival, to where they would hear scriptures, they would sing songs, they would commemorate and memorialize things that went before them in their history. And they'd just be with a lot of good friends, right? That's how festivals are. It was a time of joy, even. Much joy. But this year, this Festival of Tabernacles couldn't forget about the topic of the man Jesus. It was everywhere. The religious leaders, the crowds. Where is Jesus? Who is Jesus? What is he going to do next? What might he say? In John chapter 7, verses 11 and 12, it says, "Now at the festival, the Jewish leaders were watching for Jesus. And they were asking, 'Where is he? Have you seen him? Where is he?' Among the crowds, there was widespread whispering about him." Some were saying in their whispering voices, "He's a good man, I think." Others would reply, "No, he's deceiving the people." But no one would say anything publicly about him for fear of the leaders. You know, I recall a little bit, as I was thinking about that, I recall a little bit of this type of fear in my own life at one point, just to try to get into what it might have felt like for people to say something. As a young pastor here at Fellowship Church, I was invited. One of our young students said, "Hey, the Muslim Student Union is wondering if you would go and tell them about Jesus." And I thought, "Well, you got to be kidding me. They're just going to let me tell them about Jesus?" And so I thought, "Okay, I'll do it." Well, the day before, maybe even the day of, he said, "Hey, I got it wrong. They brought this guy in from Houston to debate you." And I thought, "Oh." Well, I came into that room. It was in Rudder Tower. And I just remember coming into that room, and man, I was as already. Boom, 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 boom. And the room, you know, maybe there were, I don't know, maybe five faithful disciples of fellowship there. And then the room was just packed. And as it began, and I did share, I shared the bridge diagram. That's what I did. And there was a debate, but I kept to the bridge diagram. But I just remember looking out there, and some of the people, I could just tell that they said that, "No, this is what we ask him to do, is to come and tell us about Jesus." And I could tell in their faces, but in the faces of others, I could tell there was a different look. And I sensed hostility in the room. And I did not want to stay there very long after it was over. I just remember kind of going and finding my way to the elevator and hoping that I was alone on the elevator. Okay? Anyway, maybe I was imagining. All I remember is I sensed hostility. And when I read about this, I think, okay, no one would say anything publicly about Jesus for fear of the leaders. So there's this powder keg situation there in Jerusalem, but so far, Jesus hasn't shown up so far. And then it says halfway through the festival, and halfway through the festival is where the crowd would be at its peak. Halfway through the festival, Jesus went up to the temple courts and began to teach. You got to be kidding me, right? The temple courts. Place, an obvious place. He sits down and he just starts teaching. Jesus pressed the question in his teaching, "Where do you stand in regards to me? Am I a blasphemer or am I the truth? Am I from God or from the devil?" Tons of people crowded the temple area. And Jesus is pressing the question. In a loving way, I believe this, is that you know, when I think, he is not belligerent here. He is not in some ways just harsh. There's so much love coming from him because he understands what is at issue here. Lovingly, but determinedly, where do you stand in regards to me? Am I from God, sent by him or not? And he doesn't back down from saying to everyone as they're pondering this question, he's not trying to pretend like there's not the hostility. He even explores the whole issue of the volatility of the issue. He says, some are trying to kill me. Some are trying to kill me. You get the idea? It's like the line is being drawn, right? Some are trying to kill me. If you're going to stand with me, you have to understand what you're getting into. Some are trying to kill me. Where do you stand? That's the real question. Where do you stand? Am I a blasphemer? Or am I the truth? And then, as others see him teaching, they ask, isn't this the man? So like, he's teaching here, right? And he's engaging with people because he's sitting down engaging with people. People are kind of around and say, and then other people I can picture, they're walking by and they say, wait, isn't this the man they're trying to kill? Here he is speaking publicly and they're not saying a word to him. Have the authorities really concluded that he is the Messiah? And then talk about Jesus continues to spread throughout the crowd. The joyous festival, all of a sudden, again, once again, it says it's becoming so full of this tension about the man Jesus. It says some tried to seize him, but many in the crowd believed in him. And they said, when the Messiah comes, will he perform more signs than this man? Oh my goodness, and then that was all the religious leaders could take. Says the Pharisees heard the crowd whispering such things about him, and then the chief priests and the Pharisees sent temple guards to arrest him. And apparently, so this is the fourth day maybe of the festival, and that keeps going through the next few days, right up until the eighth day. And the crowd is enormous, and there's all this tension in the crowds and the hostility amongst some of the religious leaders and the fear and the confusion in the crowd. It's all reaching a climax. And then on the last day, it says, and this is crazy, and then he does the most loving, but at the same time, most outrageous thing. He draws very clearly another line in the sand. Verses 37 and 38, on the last and the greatest day of the festival, Jesus didn't remain sitting this time. He wasn't quietly teaching. It says Jesus stood up. He stood up and he said in a loud voice. You got to picture this. It seems like part of what would go on every day during this festival is that there would be this priestly procession. If you ever grew up in a high church setting, like a Catholic or Presbyterian or one of those, or Greek Orthodox, I doubt if any of you did that. Grew up in a Greek Orthodox, maybe you did. But anyway, you have these priestly processions. I've seen plenty of priestly processions, and they would go from the temple all the way over to the Pool of Siloam. And I was looking on the layout of Jerusalem. This was no small walk. It was quite a distance. They would go over to the Pool of Siloam, and they would draw water from the Pool of Siloam and take it back to the temple and pour it out at the altar. And the priest would be saying, with joy you will draw water from the well of salvation. I don't know how many times they said it. I don't know if it was like a mantra that they would keep saying over and over again. But in the midst of this, Jesus stands up. And he says in a loud voice, let anyone, again, I'm not going to say in a loud voice, okay? But you got to get this, okay? He's standing up, There's thousands and thousands of people. And he says in a loud voice, let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. The line in the sand is drawn. All of the fear, all of the threats, all of the talk, all of the confusion. He knows that most of the people there are scared. They're whispering things about him. He draws the line in the sand and he says, if you're thirsty, if you desire the wells of salvation, if you want that river of living, this is what I'm going to give you. If you're thirsty for God's presence and his life in you, come to me. I wonder what happened after that. Did anyone come running and say, Jesus, I'm with you? It seems like most of them just kind of didn't know what to do. Did they keep a safe distance? John tells us that they said such things as, this man is the prophet. I don't know how far away from Jesus they were saying this, okay? Or others were saying, he is the Messiah. And then others seethed and wanted to seize him and take him to the authorities. Okay. That was the drama. Played out then. So how does that translate to us today? Because I feel like, okay, I speak today to a gathering of people in a church building in the United States where we can worship as we want. And we're all together because we already agree with the statement, right? At least 95% of you, if not higher, would already say, I stepped over the line to be counted on Jesus' side. Great. Exciting. You know, but as I prepared for this teaching, the question that the Holy Spirit kept bringing up was this. What is the word for Fellowship Church here? What is the word for Ray? Let me take a little detour right now. The story of young Ray Munich growing up in the Catholic Church and going to Catholic school. I learned the catechisms as much as a young man of those ages would. I went to the church services. They're called masses. I heard the readings from the Bible. I don't know if you knew this, at the Catholic Mass, there are readings from the Gospels and readings from the Epistles every time. Stained glass windows all around, beautiful stained glass windows that depicted aspects of the story of Jesus. There's something, if you haven't been in a Catholic church before, church building, is that there's what's called the Stations of the Cross all around the side, to where it depicts the Passion of Christ. I saw those multiple times every week. And then in this particular church building, as soon as I would enter the door right off to my left-hand side, the main doors, there was a life-size crucifix of Jesus. Right there, right there. I saw it hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times as a young man. And here's the question I ask. How could I be so surrounded by all those signs and yet miss Jesus? How in the thick of a Christian religion could I not hear the voice of Jesus calling out in a loud voice to me, come to me, Ray. Come on this side of the line and drink from me. Drink from the well of salvation. Believe in me, Ray, and rivers of living water will flow from within you. Now, the detour is going to start turning back a little bit, because I share this personal story because this seems like there's a lot of similarities between that Catholic upbringing. By the way, that was not meant to be a rant against the Catholic Church. That was my personal story of being a young religious man. I share this personal story because this is similar to the environment that surrounded Jesus. People immersed in religion. But not just any religion, the religion of the Scriptures, the religion of Yahweh God, the religion of God's chosen people to bring salvation to the rest of mankind. And yet so many of them missed Jesus. How could they be surrounded by all the signs and still miss Messiah? How in the thick of all their Yahweh religion, with the Messiah Jesus right there in their midst, could they not recognize the voice calling out to them, "Come to me and drink from the well of salvation. Believe in me and the rivers of living water will flow from within you." And I don't know if you've caught it or not, but the detour is done. We're back. Because this church environment, just like any church environment, is a religious environment. And here's the word from the Spirit, I feel like, from the Spirit for me and for the church. And I believe this is an extremely important concept for the church throughout the centuries to understand. This is a truth you and I as religious people can't dismiss. Familiar, comfortable, organizational religion is always tracking alongside come to Jesus faith. Did you catch that? Familiar religion, that's what I had. That's what the Jews had. It was familiar to them. They were used to the festivals. They were used to the way that rabbis taught. They had grown into a familiarity, a comfort. Organizational. There's nothing wrong with being organized. Yet you know what I'm saying here, right? Familiar, comfortable, organizational religion is always tracking alongside come to Jesus faith. Familiar, comfortable, organizational religion slowly creeps in and replaces sincere faith with trappings. The web. Fiber by fiber. Symbols, rules, meetings, organizations, special events, etc. All meant to glorify God. But at the same time, there's the danger of becoming a substitute. It's all very subtle. And the people in charge often don't realize that they've become less concerned with listening to Jesus somewhere along the way. Proclaiming the truth about Jesus to all those around them and responding to the Spirit as a river of life that pours out all kinds of powerful manifestations. And they begin to offer cheap substitutes, or substitutes, I say cheap, just substitutes for the real thing. And you can often see this as denominations grow old. Churches that have been around a long time grow old. And guess what? People, as they grow old. Jesus, the Holy Spirit, and life. Life with God. Fresh life. Are replaced with meetings, symbols, and rules. In going through John chapter 7, the Spirit took my mind to wondering about myself, in our church. This August makes 30 years for me as a pastor of Fellowship Church. Isn't that amazing? And I look back, and I look at the present, and I look to the future, and I wonder. I am a religious man. We are religious people. Hopefully not in the bad sense of the term, but we are religious people. We're surrounded by all the good, pious things. We're surrounded by the things of a healthy evangelical church. And the question is that as I felt the Lord speaking to my heart, have I, has Fellowship Church, grown more deaf to the voice of Jesus over time? Have we become less concerned about crossing over the line and standing on the line, or on the side of the line with Jesus, than we are with pulling off successful events and seeing the numbers grow? Is Fellowship Church drawing people into and inviting people into another version of the trappings of religion? A web, one thread at a time, that traps people into an organization that no longer hears the voice of Jesus saying, even in his loud voice, come to me. Could the worship band come on up? As we go into worship, I just think that it's very important for us, each of us, to understand, and even as a corporate gathering, that as you look at the denominations that have been around for hundreds of years, as you look at people that fervently accepted Christ at an early age, the tendency for so many, for way far too many, is to stop really hearing the voice of Jesus. During our worship time, I want to invite you to once again hear the voice of Jesus calling out loudly to you. Come to me. Come and drink. Come and experience rivers of life flowing out from within you. Ray, where is Jesus in your life these days? Is he still that well of salvation, creating that river of life flowing out of you? And Ray, are you calling out to people, cross over the line, come on, cross over the line, be here with Jesus, and join Jesus to your death and to a whole new life? And Ray, do you still understand what it means to have crossed over the line to join Jesus? Have you forgotten his loud voice and his loud cry? Come to me and drink. Let's worship.